Chapter 40. Spire Albion, Havel Landing Shipyards, AMS Predator. Grim and the shore party headed back to Predator, though he had an acutely uncomfortable sensation of being watched. He walked beside a quite inebriated Master Ferris, framing the old man between himself and Sir Benedict. The old etherealist could barely stagger along in a straight line, and was humming bits and pieces from a bawdy song beneath his breath as they travelled. "Captain," said Sir Benedict. He was walking on Ferris's other side, keeping the old man moving along with the crew of Predator. He dragged Master Ferris's two overloaded wagons along behind him. "The other two young ladies of our group were sent to—"
"I've left two men behind at the Black Horse to await them and bring them along when they return," Grim said, interrupting the young man.
"But what if they do not return?"
Sorrelin asked, his voice tight.
"They were to—" "In that eventuality, I will dispatch a search party," Grim said shortly, pointedly cutting him off again. "Let us not discuss anything further here where we may be overheard, shall we, sir?"
The young man scowled, but then seemed to think better of it and schooled his expression.
"Of course, Captain. You are correct."
Grim gave him a short nod and felt a bit of his tension ease. Young Sorrelin was both warrior-born and of high birth. Grim had met all sorts from the upper classes in his time, most of them unremarkable in most respects. The ones who had prided themselves too much upon their position, by contrast, could be the most obnoxious human beings on the face of the earth, with Hamilton Rook representing the worst portion of that particular bell curve. Grim would not care to deal with Hamilton as a warrior born, but this young man seemed a more or less decent sort. They passed the rest of the walk back to the ship in silence, and Dr. Bacon and the men detailed to carry Miss Lancaster proceeded directly to his infirmary. Master Ferris tottered up the boarding ramp to the ship and promptly wobbled about to face Benedict.
"My cane, if you please, Master Sorrelin."
Sorrelin shrugged the strap of a carrying case off his shoulder. A walking cane with a leather-wrapped head was strapped to the case, and Benedict removed it and passed it to the old etherealist.
"I'll just have a word with your ship, shall I?"
Master Ferris slurred. Grim arched an eyebrow at him and said,
"As you wish, sir."
The old man beamed and then turned and walked carefully down the deck, his wobbling steps steadied somewhat by the cane in his hand.
"All right," Grim said, turning to Sorrelin. "What happened in there?"
Grim listened as the young man told him of the Silkweaver attack in terse sentences. He finished with, "And then Gwen took up a firing stance right in front of the thing as it charged Master Ferris, and blasted half of its little head into pulp. It had enough momentum to slam into her and carry her into the wall, and it bit her at least once. But she killed it."
"Remarkable," Grim murmured. "That took more than a little courage."
Sorrelin smiled briefly.
"My dear cousin has a very odd relationship with fear, though mostly she's too busy to be bothered with it."
"I'm glad the rest of you are well. The enemy has made his first mistake."
"Sir?"
Sorrelin asked.
"It would have been smarter for them to do nothing," Grim said.
"To give us no clue at all as to their presence. Instead, they've attacked Master Ferris."
"With a silkweaver, sir?"
Sorrelin asked, his tone sceptical.
"They've never been domesticated."
Grim glanced up at him.
"Did it seem particularly tame to you?"
Sorrelin frowned.
"They've told us that Ferris is a threat to them," Grim said. "Therefore, we must be looking in the right place."
"If it isn't just a random attack of a surface creature, sir," Sorrelin said, "it might be a coincidence."
"I don't believe in the stuff myself,"
Grim said, and idly flexed his wounded arm in its sling.
"Though you're right, we shouldn't rule out the possibility. But how many large creatures do you think have harmed folk in the center of Havel Landing?"
"We could ask the Verminosters Guild, I suppose."
"An excellent thought,"
said Master Ferris, as he came back along the deck toward them.
"If there's anything odd afoot, or an enemy force in the Havel, They'll be in the ventilation tunnels and crawl spaces.
The verminositors will be the next most likely group to have spotted something.
After who, sir? Grimm asked.
The cats, of course,
Ferris said. Your ship is quite insouciant.
Grimm found himself frowning.
Is she?
Terribly,
Master Ferris said gravely.
But I believe she understands the importance of cooperation.
Ah,
Grimm said.
Well, I must see what I can do to ensure that brave young Lancaster's sacrifice was not a vain one,
Master Ferris said.
Master Sorrelin, perhaps you and I could make inquisitions of the verminositors.
But, sir, Sorrelin said, Bridget and Folly are still out there.
Well, Folly is quite capable of taking steps to protect them both if need be,
Master Ferris said,
and time is of the essence.
But I suppose if you prefer to search for them...
I'm not supposed to leave your side, sir, Sorrelin noted. Master Ferris flipped his hand in an impatient gesture.
Did the Spyrarch place me in command of this mission, or did he not?
You may have heard about my issues with authority, Grimm said. Master Ferris, I believe it may have become too risky for you to roam about Habble Landing without taking extraordinary precautions. And certainly I believe Master Sorrelin is correct in not wishing to leave your side.
Ah?
Ferris asked.
And why is that?
I met someone outside the Black Horse while we were getting the doors open, Grimm replied. A woman who struck me as extremely odd and somewhat dangerous. She did not look like the normal sort out and about at that time of the night, nor did she behave in a manner consistent with a genuine passer-by. She was accompanied by a warrior-born man. They seemed to be entirely too interested in seeing the results of the situation inside the Black Horse, with entirely too little interest in speculating upon what had happened. I suspect that they may be Auroran agents, or employed by them.
Ferris narrowed his eyes.
Odd, you say? Why so?
If she is indeed connected to the Aurorans, an agent here in Albion, she would have to have ice water in her veins and be somewhat addled to be standing in plain sight at the scene of an attack, Grimm replied. He added rather delicately, The woman seemed at least as odd as yourself, sir, meaning no offence by it.
Oh, none taken,
Ferris said.
He considered the crystal at the end of his cane gravely. Inevitable that at least one Auroran operative would have talent. I had hoped it would be otherwise, but...
He shook his head.
You are a man of uncommonly acute instinct, Captain Grimm. What else can you tell me about this person?
Grimm pursed his lips.
She seemed unnaturally concerned with manners, sir. I gathered the impression, in fact, that if I had slipped up, she might have become violent, or asked her companion to do so on her behalf.
Of that I have little doubt, the etherealist replied, his expression distant.
She said her name was Cavendish.
Ferris grimaced.
So... She's calling herself Cavendish now.
Sir? Grimm asked. Do you know the woman?
Most thoroughly, I suspect, Ferris replied.
Then you must surely see the wisdom in keeping you here in order to protect you, Grimm said. If she was involved in an attempt on your life once, why not do so again? More directly this time.
Should a warrior-born assassin surprise you inside the Habble, even Master Sorrelin could be hard-pressed to defend you.
I see your point, Captain, Ferris replied.
That said, Grimm continued, I find it interesting that only hours before an Auroran attack upon Spire Albion, I should be assaulted in the ventilation tunnels by creatures unknown, creatures that left poison in my blood, much as silk weavers would. You helped me then. Assuming you are capable, perhaps you could help Miss Lancaster the way you assisted me. Ferris frowned, and his eyes began darting here and there.
Yes. Yes, we really ought to do whatever we can for Miss Lancaster. So be it. You and Sorrelin will go.
Sir?
Sorrelin said.
Still not supposed to leave your side.
Ah, but I will be here, and quite safe, surrounded by the Grim Captain's ship and crew,
Ferris said, smiling. He tilted his head to one side and eyed Grim.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember saving your life, Captain. Did I not?
Grim sighed. You did, sir.
And does that not oblige you to me in some way?
It does.
You must trust me in this. I know precisely what I'm doing.
The old man turned and began to walk with a determined stride toward Dr. Bagan's infirmary. Then he paused, looked back at Sorrelin, and said,
I say, dear boy, could you get the doorknob for me? I never could learn the trick of the blasted things.
Sorrelin gave the etherealist a perfectly bland look. Then he smiled amiably, if wearily, and strode off after him, returning a moment later.
Shall we speak to the Verminositors? Grim asked him.
What now? In the middle of the night?
A silkweaver matriarch has killed some of their neighbours tonight,
Grim replied.
Word will have spread by now. I doubt any of them will sleep for some time.
Sorrelin grunted and nodded, and the pair of them started down the gangplank. Halfway down, Grim looked up to see Stern returning to Predator. The wiry young man was dressed in disgraceful-looking tattered rags and covered in grease, oil, and soot. When he saw Grim coming down the ramp, he stepped aside to let his captain pass.
Mr. Stern, Grim said, what is that covering you from head to toe? For a moment I took you for my shadow.
Soot and engine grease, Skip,
Stern said, grinning.
I take it you amused yourself thoroughly this evening.
Indeed I did, sir. All went well.
I'm relieved to hear it, but I can't have one of my aeronauts wandering about looking like a tunnel rat. Clean yourself up.
Stern grinned, and his teeth were a very white contrast to the soot.
I'll do that, sir, right away.
Good man,
Grim said, and began striding toward the archway leading into Habel Landing. Sorrelin looked back over his shoulder as the small sailor scampered up the gangplank.
What was that about, Captain?
Accounts payable,
Grim replied.
Do you know where the Guild has its headquarters?
If they haven't moved them,
Sorrelin said.
Then lead on, sir.
The warrior-born took the lead, and as he did, Grim took note of the young man's appearance.
You seem to be somewhat the worse for wear, sir. Did you take part in the fighting?
Some,
Sorrelin said, though it was Gwen who made the difference. Grim nodded.
What is her condition?
The bite wound was not severe, but it was poisoned. She has what might be a broken wrist, Sorrelin replied, his tone wooden but steady. She also took a severe blow to the back of her head, and has been insensible ever since. Her head is swollen. The physician wasn't sure if her skull had been cracked or not. He showed his teeth in an unpleasant smile.
To think of all the times I ribbed her about having a hard head and a stiff neck. Now she's barely breathing. Hold fast, Master Sorrelin,
Grim said.
I've seen men who recovered from severe concussions in a day or two. Mr. Bagan knows his trade, and Master Ferris knows some things most of us don't, I dare say. There is ample reason to hope.
The warrior-born frowned. I'm not sure how comforting that is, sir. Master Ferris is...
I do not wish to sound disrespectful, but the man is...
One grip shy of a steering column,
Grim suggested.
10 degrees short of a compass. Aviating without goggles.
Sorrelin's expression flickered through surprise and amusement before he schooled it to neutrality again. A bit eccentric, sir.
Hardly,
Grim said. He's mad. Benedict frowned for a moment.
Truly?
Every etherealist I've ever met has been,
Grim said, as they passed into the spire proper.
Something about the energies they work with. It affects each of them uniquely, as far as I've been able to see.
Is that why he's so odd about doorknobs?
I assume so,
Grim said. He nodded toward the two piled wagons.
I've seen him demand a number of strange items from his apprentice for no sensible reason I could detect, and add them to that collection of his, the one he insists on taking everywhere with him. And you'll note that his apprentice seems unable to directly address anyone else, apart from Master Ferris.
She's mad too.
She seems a pleasant enough child, Grimm said. But yes, presumably. Sorrelin considered that for several steps.
Sir, is it quite safe to be around such folk?
If they were safe, I suspect the Spyrarch would not have sent them into the enemy's teeth the way he has, Grimm replied. None of us on this mission are particularly safe to be around, Master Sorrelin, yourself included. Of course they aren't safe. The real question is whether or not they can be trusted.
And do you trust them, sir?
Grimm considered the question for half a block before he said, The Spyrarch has extended his trust. I am willing to do so as well. Even though they're mad.
There is madness and madness, Master Sorrelin, Grimm said.
Ferris and Folly are quite odd, and I take considerable comfort in that fact.
Sir?
In my experience, the worst madmen don't seem odd at all, Grimm said. They appear to be quite calm and rational, in fact, until the screaming starts. He glanced up to find Sorrelin staring at him, frowning.
Let me put it this way, sir. If you ever meet an etherealist who does not seem odd, you will have ample reason for caution. An etherealist who speaks to things that are not there and cannot track the day of the week is par for the course. One who is perfectly well dressed, calmly spoken, and inviting you to tea? That is someone to be feared.